From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. The main character of Ben Lerner's first novel, Leaving the Atocha Station, is a young American abroad, Adam Gordon, a young American poet living in Spain. Drifting, druggy, lying, a brilliant fool of a hero, he's been called. He made novelist Gary Cernovich think of another young American abroad, writing in the 1920s, Ernest Hemingway. And how it's changed to be an American abroad since then. This hour on point from The Sun Also Rises to Right Now, Being American Abroad. We'll hear in this hour from Ben Lerner, author of the new book, Leaving the Atocha Station, and more. But joining me first right now from New York City is Gary Cernovich. He recently wrote of Hemingway, Americans Abroad, and Ben Lerner's debut novel for the New York Times Sunday Book Review. Gary's also a novelist, the author of Great American Plain and The Contrarians. Gary Cernovich, it's a pleasure to have you with us. Thanks so much for being here.
Thank you for having me, Tom.
So tell us about this book first. We'll hear in a moment from the author himself, but tell us about the story. What is Leaving the Atocha Station?
You know, I think Leaving the Atocha Station is probably one of the more kind of remarkable, and at least people I talk to, one of the more notable first novels that have come out in quite a long time. And, you know, it's in some way a very classic format of a sort of a Bildungsroman about a young poet sort of coming into himself as an artist and coming into himself as a man. Mm. But, you know, and it has a specific voice and a specific sort of way that of self-consciousness that's pretty remarkable and capturing how it, you know, means to be alive in ways that a lot of us other writers have kind of talked about and attempt, but really successful. And, you know, the reason it for me at least, that it kind of reminded me of The Sun Also Rises is a lot of the, you know, kind of the plot and a lot of the, you know, sort of setting is some, you know, very kind of familiar from that, which is sort of a, you know, it starts out a very dissolute young man in Spain, mm-hmm. Romance, wine, drugs, all the good stuff. Mm. And, you know, and but the difference between that and Hemingway, which on the one hand, you know, very similar, both from Kansas, both kind of, you know, trying to find themselves. But the difference is, you know, really, really night and day.
Describe the protagonist here, the narrator of Leaving the Atocha Station. This is Adam Gordon, as you say, young American. He's there. He hasn't just been driving an ambulance in World War One. He's there on a nice fellowship, a research fellowship to look at art and the Spanish-American War. And he's a seeker.
Yeah, and you know, and there's both, as you said, sort of a brilliant fool sort of to him that he's kind of bluffed his way into the fellowship. He doesn't or claims he doesn't speak Spanish all that well. He's, you know, kind of there seeking both, you know, as a poet and, you know, in any novel about a poet that is also a novel, also in some ways a novelist because the final product is, mm-hmm. is the book we're reading, that he's seeking a way to express, you know, kind of life that isn't kind of the falseness of so many words always feel kind of clumsy and all thumbs. And what he's seeking on one hand is just what everyone's seeking as a poet, which is, you know, not just talk about these incidents in life, not just talking about, you know, these discrete experiences, but talking, I think there's a line, the texture of life, the texture of et cetera. You know, of mm-hmm. how we imagine
the hum
life
and buzz of life's white machine. So how do you get your hands around describing that?
Yes. And at the same time, he's also, you know, just a young man trying to, you know, fall in love, trying to understand his place in the world. And, you know, these two are intertwined pretty closely.
So Ben Lerner's book does not talk about, doesn't even allude to Hemingway's The Sun Also Rises, because that goes all the way back to 1926. Yep. And with its epigraph from Gertrude Stein, spoken to Ernest Hemingway, "You are all a lost generation," her talking there about those that came out of World War One. But as you read this, it brought Hemingway and sort of the compare and contrast mode to mind as you read. What and why?
I think first is sort of a cultural context that, you know, we're clearly living in a period of a lot of, I think I described as hand-wringing about American decline. You think about, you know, the famous leading from behind of Obama's advisor that was quoted in The New Yorker. Mm-hmm. You think about, you know, sometimes, you know, Mitt Romney's presidential campaign, the banner is Believe in America. You think about China and sort of our anxiousness about that. So I think as you know, one thinks about Hemingway versus leaving the Atocha Station in the very obvious ways that these are young men from the same, you know, at least fictionally from the same place in America, in Spain, writers, and you know, and ones that are you know fairly love, alcohol, adventure are on a very kind of a kind of a crass level, mm-hmm. sort of the three kind of the three meaty parts of their life. But the contrast is these are from not this is not that long ago, 80 odd years apart, but it seems like two very different worlds.
Well, describe that. I mean, here you have these two fictional characters, Hemingway's hero from Kansas City, Missouri, and Ben Lerner's Adam Gordon, fictionally from Topeka, Kansas. Here they are. They both end up in Spain, and they're being American there, but in quite different ways. And the surround you describe of expectation of America, or just the resonance of Americanness, quite different, Gary.
Yeah, I mean, exactly. I mean, I think first, just there's some, that probably the context is some generational differences. I mean, what is the wound that they're experiencing? I mean, Hemingway obviously is the wound of like all the lost generation of World War I and sort of the dissolution that follows it. Adam Gordon is a very different wound, probably a more interior wound of almost being outside of history versus a very specific physical wound of history. There's, generational, how you handle it. I mean, Hemingway, Sun Also Rises sort of set the iconic stoicism of a Hemingway hero, and mm-hmm. and Adam Gordon is obviously very verbal and tries to kind of attack it, not with stoicism, though there are some comic bits where he kind of pretends he's a Hemingway hero, but, and in sort of being pretty mute in a response. But there's also, there's also sort of a difference of self-consciousness where the Hemingway character is very, very confident. And though there are, a few breakthroughs of the inner life and Jake Barnes crying, it is more of it feels very confident. He is, an aficionado of bullfighting, and he is, in the club of true Spanish aficionados, and there's never a sense that he doesn't belong. So that context is part of a few pretty notable differences between there's the self-consciousness. There's what I like to think of as sort of the path of condescension, where in Hemingway, Europeans are either, sort of the richer Europeans are sort of dissolute and mm-hmm. and weak, and the only Europeans he likes are sort of the noble bullfighter or the noble peasants. But the American in that book is sort of the adult in the room, and it's very different than Leaving the Atocha Station, where one of the sort of the repeated bits that's both heartbreaking but highly amusing is Adam Gordon lies a few times, a pretty horrible lie that his mother is dead, and no one even bothers, or at least the two women in particular, don't even bother when he tells them it was a lie to be that upset about it. So it's sort of there's a line, sort of the drunken American fool brought to the party as a joke. He's sort of kind of the child, and sort of there's that reversal of condescension. There's, like I mentioned, there's the self-consciousness, mm-hmm. and then very noticeably there's kind of who's impacting who is disruptive and who is open, and there's two main American characters in The Sun Also Rises: Jake Barnes, who the narrator, who famously in the final scene, kind of this stoic and kind of ironic, that you kind of feel like the entire experience of the novel has had no impact on him, mm-hmm. and sort of allegorically say that Europe has really had no impact on him, and he's sort of,
because it's Americans that impact, it's Americans that disrupt.
Yeah, it's and the other main character, Robert Cohn, the mm-hmm. he beats up the premier bullfighter in Pamplona at the time, and has him on the ground, and sort of these knockabout Americans. And it's not, there's some famous, written by a British, quiet American of Graham Greene, who thinks of, just sort of this nefarious American disruptive force. And it's a little more subtle, mm-hmm. maybe because it was in the 20s and The Sun Also Rises, but it's very different in Leaving the Atocha Station, where the narrator is, in some ways his growing up is sort of internationalism, to use kind of a foreign policy term, where he kind of opens himself up to being in Spain. He lets that experience kind of change who he is and allows him to be a better poet, be a better person, be more comfortable as a human being. And in a pretty, surprisingly for a novel that starts out, very, somewhat dark and sort mm-hmm. of, interior, allows him to really kind of, you know, the ending, you know, it's quite hopeful in a way.
Gary Sinovitz, stand by. We've got to take a short break here. We're talking about a couple of different generations of Americans abroad, Hemingways and young Americans right now, where we've come, where the country's come in the eyes of the world, in our own eyes. The Sun Also Rises, 1926, Ernest Hemingway, the protagonist there, Jake Barnes. He's impotent from a World War I wound, but as Gary Sinovitz describes it, in that time, in that book, Americans are the strong ones. Now, well, it's a new generation, it's a new time, less consequential in Leaving the Atocha Station. We'll talk with the author of the Leaving the Atocha Station, Ben Lerner, in just a moment, and you can join us. Listeners, what does it mean to be an American abroad these days? Does it still carry special weight, stature, respect, or not? Are we just another nationality now, out in the world? Is that a good thing? The theme from The Sun Also Rises film behind us here. You can join us this hour at 800-423-8255. 800-423-TALK. Gary Sinovitz, please stand by there in New York. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about two generations of Americans abroad, Hemingways, and young Americans right now or in the last decade, where we've come, where the country's come in the eyes of the world, in our own eyes. We'll hear in just a moment from the author of Leaving the Atocha Station, first-time novelist and poet, Ben Lerner. Of course, the kind of old reputation of Hemingway was the big two-fisted writer, but we have plenty of fun with Hemingway these days, too, as Woody Allen did in his 2011 film Midnight in Paris. Gil Pender, modern writer, played by Owen Wilson there, travels back in time to 1920s Paris, where he meets Ernest Hemingway, played over-the-top kind of caricature style by Corey Stoll.
You liked my book?
Liked? I loved all your work.
Yes, it was a good book because it was an honest book. And that's what war does to men. And there's nothing fine and noble about dying in the mud, unless you die gracefully. And then it's not only noble, but brave.
And we chortle and chortle with Woody Allen. Let's chortle some more. Here's more of Woody Allen's Ernest Hemingway in Midnight in Paris.
When the man who is brave and true looks death squarely in the face, like some rhino hunters I know, or Belmonte, who's truly brave, it is because they love with sufficient passion to push death out of their minds. Until it returns, as it does to all men. And then you must make really good love again.
We've got Woody Allen and Ernest Hemingway there, of course, talking about Juan Belmonte, the great Spanish bullfighter, friend of Hemingway's. That from Midnight in Paris, 2011. Gary Sinovitz, stand by in New York City. We're so glad you're here. Also joining us from New York right now is Ben Lerner, author of the debut novel Leaving the Atocha Station, finalist for the L.A. Times Book Award for First Fiction and the New York Public Library's Young Lions Prize. Poet, books of poetry, Mean Free Path, Angle of Yaw, The Lichtenberg Figures. He teaches in the writing program at Brooklyn College. Ben Lerner, thanks very much for being with us today.
Thanks for having me, Tom.
I get the feeling when you set out to write this, you were not thinking of having clips of Ernest Hemingway a la Woody Allen played for you as you talked about your book.
I didn't anticipate that. It's a great scene, though.
It is a great scene. What do you think of how Gary Sinovitz has read you? He's thought back to Hemingway, and he's come in to think about Americans of very different generations in your setting in Spain. We know that's not what you set out to write about or maybe even necessarily to illustrate here, but here you've got a smart young thinker and novelist reading you and thinking about it. What do you make of his contrast?
I mean, I think it's a really insightful and provocative juxtaposition, and I'm grateful for Gary's thinking about the novel. I mean, you write a book and you hope it'll be a jumping off point for interesting conversations, and Gary definitely started a very interesting one. I mean, I have to say, while I didn't think a lot about The Sun Also Rises, mm-hmm. Hemingway looms so large in kind of the Spanish mythology of the American writer, and Spain looms so large in Hemingway's personal mythology that it was a juxtaposition that made sense to me.
So put them side by side then. You're Adam Gordon, your character, his Jake Barnes, the Americans of his time. You find yours I don't know, humbled, more modest, you know, less at the center of things, not necessarily the strong ones?
Yeah, I mean, I definitely think there's a difference in the status of the American and what the American signifies for these two protagonists. I mean, part of it is that for Adam Gordon, abroad in the kind of Bush era global war on terror, you know, the American is radically unpopular. It's radically unpopular in Spain in the sense that, you know, the government of Spain supported the invasion of Iraq, but it was overwhelmingly unpopular with the Spanish people.
Mm-hmm.
You know, America has a history in Spain of being associated with supporting Franco as a counter to Soviet power, although in the United States we often think of ourselves as having, you know, unequivocally combated fascism. So certainly the American signifies differently. And also, in addition to that kind of decline of the status of the American, there's also a difference in the texture of their experience that I think has to do with a kind of triumph of American-style capitalism. That is, Adam Gordon is constantly re-encountering forms of the American, even when he's abroad. And I think that's a little different now, right? I mean, you
mean Starbucks and sort of American-style capitalism, the whole envelope.
Right. So that there's a way in which America's even more ubiquitous for Adam Gordon than maybe it was for Hemingway's protagonist.
We were reading back in The Sun Also Rises. There's a scene where they're eating dinner at a restaurant and it's crowded with Americans who found out about it from some listing from the American Women's Club in Paris. And suddenly everybody's there and lots of Americans, and they're eating, you know, sounds like pretty American style. This happened to be before in that novel, before they get to Spain. It's roast chicken and green beans and mashed potatoes and some apple pie and cheese. Mm-hmm. But then you've got a passage, and I wish you'd read it for us. I think this is page 48 or so, Ben, where in Leaving the Atocha Station, you're describing your character looking around at Americans who are really, they're not brassy. They're not the big mouth ones who are standing out and wearing an American flag around their shoulders. They're doing something quite different. Could you read from there for us?
Sure. I reserved my most intense antipathy for those Americans who attempted to blend in, who made Spanish friends and eschewed the company of their countrymen, who refused to speak English, and who, when they spoke Spanish, exaggerated the peninsular lisp. At first, I was unaware of the presence in Madrid of these subtler, quieter Americans, but as I became one, I began to perceive their numbers. I would be congratulating myself on lunching with Isabel at a tourist-free restaurant, congratulating myself on making contact with authentic Spain, which I only defined negatively as an American free space, when I would catch the eyes of a man or woman at another table, early 20s to early 30s, surrounded by Spaniards, reticent compared to the rest of the company, smoking a little sullenly, and I knew we would both know immediately that we were of a piece. I came to understand that if you looked around carefully as you walked through the supposedly least touristy barrios, you could identify young Americans whose lives were structured by attempting to appear otherwise, probably living on savings or giving private English lessons to rich kids, temporary expatriates sporting haircuts and clothing that, in hard-to-specify ways, seemed native to Madrid, in part because they were imperfect or belated versions of American styles. Each member of this shadowy network resented the others, who were irritating reminders that nothing was more American, whatever that means, than fleeing the American, whatever that is, and that their soft version of self-imposed exile was just another of late empire's packaged tours.
Ben Lerner, reading from Leaving the Atocha Station, and I love that last phrase. Gary Srinovitz picked up on it as well, just another of late empire's packaged tours. Gary, as you hear Ben read from his novel there, and that phrase, I mean, that seems very unlike at least the way Hemingway was presenting his American abroad in the 1920s. It was no package tour. He was there driving an ambulance to begin with in the middle of war in France, in Italy.
Yeah, and I think there, you know, is, you know, I think Hemingway almost invented the glamorous idea of kind of the young American abroad. And a lot of this was about the times. You know, I mean, he went, you know, with a sort of, you know, obviously native to Hemingway adventurous spirit. But when he was surrounded by Americans in the 20s, Paris was one of the cheapest places in the world to be, and sort of writers flocked there. And you had, you know, a pretty broad period in the middle where American fiction didn't feature a lot of Americans abroad. I mean, if you think about, you know, the great post-war novelist of Updike and Bellow and Roth, or even, you know, guys, you know, more recent like Jonathan Franzen and David Foster Wallace. These are very American-centered novels. And it's interesting that a new generation is kind of coming to, you know, Americans abroad as sort of a center of our experience. And I think it's part of, you know, what Ben is talking about, that this has become whatever that is of the American experience is kind of fleeing, and clearly for, you know, not all Americans, clearly for a subset of well-educated and from, you know, relatively well-off families are kind of privileged from this. But it's interesting that, you know, Hemingway as a pioneer of this sort of set the romanticism of this, but was very different when you are kind of realizing now doing it that, you know, as Ben said earlier, that Hemingway kind of haunts you. You know, that precedent that you kind of feel that you're playing Hemingway almost.
What I read, Ben, in your book was having personally witnessed generations of American men trying to sort of be like Hemingway before we got to the point where we are now, where Woody Allen's just brutally sending him up. Your guy's really not like that and isn't aspiring to be. I mean, the very title of the book itself, Leaving the Atocha Station, we should remind listeners, the Atocha Station is the site of the terrible terrorist Madrid bombing back in 2004, and your protagonist, Adam Gordon, comes on this one morning in his life there in Spain. But the first thing he does, having sort of stumbled through this scene of carnage, is stumble back to his room and pick up his computer and read about it on the digital newspaper, on the New York Times. And he's not going out and seeing more. He's not, you know, sort of Hemingway-style, I don't know, hands in the guts of life and all that. He's refreshing his screen.
That's right. Yeah, I mean, one of the things I was interested in trying to represent in the novel is this kind of reorganization, or maybe it's a disorganization of global space, where even when, you know, you're a few hundred yards away from a historical catastrophe, you're also having your experience of it mediated by all these different technologies. And I think Adam Gordon is trying to figure out if he can participate in history, if he can be a witness to history, or if historical trauma like the bombings at the Atocha Station are for him just one more media event. And that's certainly not the same challenge facing somebody like Hemingway's protagonist, who has historical trauma inscribed in his body, who suffered this, you know, this terrible wound, as Gary mentioned, from fighting.
I mean, that's interesting. As a marker of your generation, I was reading recently a terrific book by maybe contemporary of yours, Adam Wilson, called Flat Screen. And now it's much more earthy, gutsy. Hemingway would recognize a lot in there in a dark, debauched way, maybe. But he's also living through the screen very, very fixedly at a lot of points in this. You know, I wonder what if you've got Hemingway looking over your shoulder, Ben, as an author, you know, what does he think of this American in Spain in the year 2000 something, rushing back to his little apartment to look at a screen?
I'm sure he thinks he's a despicable weakling. I mean, you know, there's an interesting one. Another way to juxtapose kind of Leaving the Atocha Station and The Sun Also Rises is to kind of track the different status of machismo in both books. I mean, you know, the fist fights in Hemingway, or the big game hunting that Woody Allen was parodying.
Get the rhino, yeah.
Right. I mean, there is this real celebration of virility and violence, even though that's, of course, complicated in The Sun Also Rises by the war wound of the protagonist, right? But, you know, I think that whereas in Leaving the Atocha Station, there's a scene where Adam Gordon gets punched in the face and he immediately starts thinking about how he can allow himself to look more injured
He bites into his lip to make more blood come out.
Right.
I mean, it's just not Hemingway style.
It's not Hemingway at all. He has no interest in getting up and throwing a punch. He's just interested in how he can kind of socially manage that.
He decides to pretend that the punch has laid him out so he doesn't have to be in the fight that presumably the Hemingway-esque character would want to leap right into. Ben Lerner, author of Leaving the Atocha Station, and Gary Cernovitz, please stand by. We've got lots of callers here. Let me go to Byron, calling from Lebanon, New Hampshire. Byron, thanks for calling. You're on the air.
Hi there, Tom. I just listening to this conversation, there seems to be a wonderful discussion of these generational differences about Americans in Europe. Hemingway having been an actual ambulance driver in a combat zone,
right?
And then I don't know, remember the character's name. I'm going to have to go read this novel.
Jake Barnes from Hemingway, Adam Gordon from Ben Lerner.
who is an American in Spain, but not during the Bush era. My generation, in the middle of the Cold War, we were in serving in the military in Europe, and this period of time was kind of in the middle. So there's this current of American military presence in Europe that's going all the way through, but the current novel's character, he is judged on the basis of the involvement of his peers far, far away in a different war, it sounds like, from what I'm hearing. And it's just an interesting question about these three generations and America's military presence in Europe through this entire century.
Yeah, it really does back up so much history. You're quite right about that, and we'll look at it. We're talking about Americans abroad in this early century. Ben, how about it? Your protagonist does not come out of a war, but there's a war in the background. People in Spain know there's war going on as he's there in the middle first decade of the 21st century.
That's right. I mean, you know, for Adam Gordon, the kind of global war on terror and the country's wars are both kind of everywhere but very diffuse for him. And this is, of course, an expression of intense privilege and the structure of contemporary warfare, where a lot of the people who are doing the soldiering, you know, aren't people who have the same kind of cultural access as Adam Gordon has. I mean, he has the privilege of confusing military conflict with spectacle, because he's not actually putting his body on the line.
Does that make him less a man or more at one with the rest of the world, which has watched America's wars?
I mean, I think it makes him, I don't know if it makes him more or less of a man. I tend not to think in those terms, but I think it makes him intensely contemporary in the sense that he's trying to figure out how he can be a citizen, or how he can present himself as an authentic individual with so many different forms of mediation standing between him and the impact of American power in the world. And it's also another way, you know, the Atocha bombings themselves, you could think of how complicated they are in a global sense, right? I mean, they're
kind of Al-Qaeda, echo of 9/11 in Spain,
right? Mm-hmm. Right. There are Al-Qaeda bombings that are taking place on March 11th. To punish the Spanish people and government for supporting an American invasion. And, you know, the victims of the bombings are disproportionately immigrant laborers in Spain who are on their way to work.
Yeah.
So it's kind of a figure for the global complexity of military conflict, which doesn't fall clearly along state lines, and which, you know, you're kind of proximal to and distant from simultaneously when you're in a position like Adams.
Ben Lerner, stand by. Gary Cernovitz, we're so glad you set up this contrast for us. It's a really interesting intergenerational kind of a space to look through here. Gary Cernovitz is with us from New York, author of The Contrarians and Great American Plane. We're talking about Ben Lerner's first novel, Leaving the Atocha Station. Listeners, you can join us. What's the American path from Ernest Hemingway to Ben Lerner to Americans abroad now, from brawling and bullfights to self-doubt and rumination? What's the American reputation now in the world? The expectation? Where have we come in the world? 800-423-8255 is our number. 800-423-TALK. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about two generations of Americans abroad, Ernest Hemingway's and young Americans right now, where we've come, where the country's come in the eyes of the world, in our own eyes. Ben Lerner has written a first novel, Leaving the Atocha Station. It's gotten pretty good reviews. And among those whose attention it caught was Gary Cernovitz, novelist himself, who's written recently in the New York Times Sunday Book Review, contrasting Hemingway's American abroad and Lerner's American abroad. 80, 90 years apart here and counting. You can join the conversation this hour. What's the American reputation out in the world now? The expectation? Where have we come in the world? What about the time when we were the strong ones? Have you been out there? Have you felt that? Gary, response online here. B writes, as a young American abroad, France, says, I find it simultaneously inspiring and daunting, the footsteps that have been laid before me. I guess he means kind of Hemingway right on through. He says, on a personal level, people are always kind. On a global political level, they are not big fans of the U.S. On the other hand, there's opportunity. Lucas writes to us on Facebook, opportunities abound for those who know how to walk softly in a world where globalization is not a choice but a necessity. That walk softly modesty is something that Gary Cernovitz finds in Bernd Lerner's work. Matt's calling from Pound Ridge, New York. Matt, thanks very much for calling. You're on the air.
Thanks for having me. I really liked that last comment about walking softly. But I pretty much just got back this Christmas from living for a little over a year on a small island in Vietnam.
Okay.
For an adventure tourism company called Slow Pony that most of our customers are European, Northern European, Scandinavian. And in general, one thing that really struck me was their sort of disgust and a lot of the times pity for how much we have to pay for education, for health insurance. You know, they just think it's appalling. At this point, it's almost like they just feel sorry for us, and they still understand that America is huge and great and all, and they actually want to come here to go rock climbing, but a lot of them don't want to live here. They would never think of it. And opportunities abroad just keep growing and growing. There are jobs everywhere out there, especially in East Asia. And at this point, like, I'm looking at Santorum, and I'm thinking, wow, if he wins, or, you know, I mean, that's not likely, but if something like that happened, there's nothing stopping, like, a bright, educated young man like me from just leaving again and going into the world to avoid America's pitfalls at this point.
Hey, Matt, I appreciate your call. Real opportunities out there, but don't go presuming that you're going to have anything like adulation. We've got it from a small island off Vietnam, Aaron in Providence, Rhode Island. Aaron, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Hi. I recently came back from Ireland as a student. I'm a senior now at a college in Rhode Island. And the perception I had was from the professional's point of view, they think, or at least I was treated, I can't speak for everybody, but they treated me almost as I was a spoiled 13-year-old. I'm 21, so I don't consider myself a child. But the younger crowd about my generation were very inquisitive about the United States and wanted to know what was the hardships there. They weren't really wondering what was the great things. They wanted to know the bad things, like what have you not told about America? And when I told them how much I pay for my education per year, they're like, I don't even pay that for my whole degree.
That is interesting here. So there, on the one hand, you're were seen as maybe spoiled in Ireland. We had Matt, where Americans were pitied in his island off Vietnam. Let me get one more, and we'll move. Sybil in Charleston, South Carolina. Sybil, you're on the air. Thanks for calling.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
Thank you for having me.
Mm-hmm.
I grew up in Italy. I moved there. My parents moved there when I was five, and I lived there like an Italian kid and went to Italian public schools all my life. And I live in the States now. So I've had the experience of seeing the American from the Hemingway to your author, Lerner, to the perspective that all of the callers have offered in the past couple of minutes.
Mm-hmm.
It's interesting because I think that in the older generations, I think that there was a time to detach your individual identity and who you are as a human being from being an American. And I think that there's less possibility for that now, even though I agreed with your Facebook writer who said, you know, there's opportunity to tread lightly. That's true. But ultimately, when you're an American, I think global policy and who America is as a nation always casts shadow upon any American abroad now. And I think that Obama gave us a little bit of a reprieve, but unfortunately with this looming election, I think we may be heading into a worse time in terms of our image. And people really don't view America anymore as the great land of opportunity. You know, in World War II, we were doing the right thing. And since then, we really haven't to many occasions. And foreigners, people who live in Europe have opportunity to read real news and that Americans often don't get. So they're actually really informed about what goes on. And it does not put a good light on us as Americans abroad.
Sybil, I appreciate your call as well. Ben Lerner, Gary Cernovitz, please stand by. I want to welcome into our conversation right now from Kansas City, Missouri, Steve Paul. He's a senior writer and arts editor at the Kansas City Star. a scholar of Hemingway, a member of the Hemingway Society and Foundation. He'll be in Boston this weekend for the Hemingway Foundation Pen Award. He's at the Kansas City Star, where Hemingway himself worked briefly before he went off for parts European. Steve Paul, thank you so much for being with us today.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for having me.
You know Hemingway. You know his work. You know The Sun Also Rises, and you know Ben Lerner's work here. What do you make of the gap or the evolution in American-ness abroad between these two writers and times?
Yeah, well, Ben wrote a terrific novel, of course, as did Hemingway. I think it's easy to fall into some traps, however, when we talk about Hemingway and The Sun Also Rises, the traps of the myth of Hemingway's machismo and the myth of Americans in Paris and that his generation was lost. I think Jake Barnes himself may have seemed a little lost at times, depending on how much he was drinking. But he was a working journalist, and he was serious about what he was doing. And his wound is not the wound of a macho man, clearly. And so all these complications start arising. I wanted to go back to something that Gary mentioned early on about how Robert Cohn, who is one of the problematic American characters in Sun Also Rises.
Alongside the protagonist, Jake Barnes, yeah.
Exactly. How he beat up Romero the bullfighter. Well, it was Romero got in the last punch, and Romero, it was Romero who, as he's in the bull ring, all that falls away, and he says his spirit was not touched by that fight. And, you know, Sun Also Rises is a transformational book in the sense that it begins in Paris and ends in Spain, and you can look at it as Spain is presenting some moments of enlightenment, and some scholars have gone so far as to call it a religious pilgrimage on Jake's part.
But let me ask you, if I may, Steve. Yeah. I mean, there you've got Jake Barnes and Robert Cohn from Hemingway's work, and you've got Jake as a working man. I mean, he's supporting himself. He's like on top of it. Though he's got his own problems, he's got his own doubts. And there's Cohn. I mean, he's beating up a bullfighter. Now you've got Ben Lerner's protagonist, Adam Gordon. He's not a working man, which seems very much maybe of this generation or this economy. I don't know. He's privileged in a different way, and he's certainly not beating up bullfighters. What's that change?
Well, as Ben mentioned, he, instead of rushing out to the street and witnessing or writing about the explosion, Jake Barnes would have been covering it, would have been taking notes, and would have been filing stories for the news service. And so that is a major difference. Hemingway was very dismissive of people who didn't work, and Jake Barnes was Hemingway called them the scum of Greenwich Village, who have taken over La Rotonde in Paris, and was very dismissive of American tourists who didn't contribute to the world and just took up space and drank and smoked all day in the cafe. So,
by that measure, Gary Cernovitz, he would have had a tough time with Ben Lerner's Adam Gordon. I mean, he is not working. His competency is not his first thing. He's that kind of drifting guy in the cafe.
Yeah, but I think the one interesting thing is, and Ben didn't write an allegory of foreign policy, but the interesting thing is that sort of more that you kind of think about the book and think about not only Hemingway's time and, as Steve mentioned, the competence of America, of a sort of a young country, out of World War One, at the start of the American century, and you think about what one of your first callers talked about in the 80s, and you think I mentioned in the essay Whit Stillman's Barcelona, you think about there as America as this clawed beast, and every scene in that book is just people just kind of very vocal in contempt for America. It's a much more subtle scene in Leaving the Atocha Station, where, yes, on the one hand, he's not beating up bullfighters. Not a single one was beaten up in the entire novel.
Not the worst thing, maybe.
Not the worst thing in the world. But that that there's the reaction of, yes, there's this, somewhat of a pity, somewhat of one of your callers talked about sort of treated as a child. But on the other hand, as the novel progresses, there's a strength that and an admiration that the Spaniards have for Gordon as a poet and as he's maturing himself.
Him in this contemporary young American abroad that they're admiring?
I think one is just his ability to walk softly, you know, as one of your callers said, and his ability to kind of, you know, open himself up to Spain, his ability to kind of mature as a poet and, you know, and maybe as a person. And then just, you know, there's obviously charms to him that he's sort of denying in the first part of the novel that kind of flourish as the novel progresses. So I think we have, you know, what the essay was trying to do was, on the one hand, I think all of us are nostalgic for the days. I would personally like to have beaten up a bullfighter in the 1920s. It sounds like a very glamorous thing to put on one's resume.
Yeah.
But, you know, we kind of have this, you know, there's this inevitable decline to, you know, a nation of you know, sissies on Fulbright scholarships. But the nice thing about the book is kind of the ending and the hopefulness of it, and, you know, sort of the way in which that hopefulness is tied up with a, you know, kind of a more clear self-consciousness, and a way it captures, you know, the life as a, you know, in the novel and in the poetry in it, that it's not all just gloom and doom.
Steve, we'll take that to Ben Lerner, but Steve, what do you make of about that hopefulness in this more modest American abroad?
Well, I think you're exactly right. Garrett's exactly right. And I was thinking along the same lines in terms of, you know, Adam is so dismissive of his own talent as a poet and calls himself a fraud and wonders what he's doing and thinks he's misrepresenting himself. But clearly by the end of the book, he's talked into, I think, the fact that he is a fine poet. And the ending of Ben's book, you know, Ben is an infinitely much better poet than Hemingway ever was, although Hemingway's best poetry was always embedded in his prose. And as Ben's book is embedded with much poetry. And I think the ending of Ben's book is just a beautiful poetic statement that reflects not only on Ben as the writer, but Adam as the character.
We will look at exactly that. We're talking about Americans abroad from the time of Ernest Hemingway to right now. Let me go to Madeline, calling from Williamsburg, Virginia. Madeline, thanks for calling. You're on the air.
Okay. I just wanted to comment about Hemingway's books, which I'm very familiar with and used to teach, as a matter of fact, and how we're perceived today abroad. First of all, Hemingway and other members of the so-called lost generation in the 20s are almost a world away from us now.
Mm-hmm.
We're not perceived, and we don't have the same experiences as those people did right after World War I and well before World War II, which has had such an influence, and recent wars, of course. I think that Americans who have never traveled abroad out of the United States have a very different view of America than do Europeans and other people in countries abroad, particularly in Europe. I've traveled extensively through Europe, Scandinavia, the British Isles, and to some extent in Asia. But Europeans particularly do not see us in the same way we see ourselves.
Well, no doubt. I mean, they've got a different perspective. They're getting a different news flow. They're watching with a different eye. And Americans who don't go abroad are shielded. But those who do, let me get one more call. Madeline, thanks. Emily in Westford, Vermont. Emily, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
Yeah, I've lived in Asia for 15 years. I was born in Nepal, and I've lived in the U.S. for the past 4 years now.
How old are you now? Oh, so you're how old now?
I'm 19.
Okay. What's your experience?
Well, I wanted to say mostly, I was going to say a few negative things, but they've been talked about, and I think you get it. A positive thing about being an American abroad was that there was this collective identity within the expat community there that was very powerful and very much like made me who I am, because I've growing up like been thinking about my American identity, always wanting to come back here, always like thinking about how I can do something for America. And then I'm here in America now, and instead of feeling American, I feel like I'm an expat abroad, but in America.
Hey, Emily, did you feel admired abroad, pitied abroad as an American, something in between?
Well, within the community, very much safe. But I actually, during the Bush era, we were so embarrassed to call ourselves American that we would usually call ourselves Canadian, my entire family.
That's another way entirely, but it says a lot. Emily, our time is short. Ben Lerner, you have your Adam Gordon at the end here finding his feet in a way and saying, I planned to live forever in a skylit room surrounded by my friends. Gary Cernovitz and others look at that and say, well, there's this new modest American not having to, you know, roll up his sleeves and stand astride the world, but to be in it, to be enmeshed in it, part of it, and at peace with that.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, the novel ends at this poetry reading where Adam Gordon is reading his poems and the translations of his poems are being read. And I do think kind of translation is held up as a kind of utopian moment, as a more collaborative attitude towards relations between people than the kind of old national discourses. You know, one of the big differences that we haven't kind of mentioned or we've alluded to between the books is that Adam, you know, even though both of the protagonists are young, I think Jake feels like his life is over and the sun also rises, you know, that he has a wound he can't recover from and that he's been marked by a kind of historical trauma. And Adam Gordon is a kid. Mm-hmm. And even though he's neurotic and anxious and pissed off about a lot of things, he also, I think, has a future before him and is trying to figure out how to move forward within it.
That may argue. I'd like to think it argues for a new birth, maybe for Americans abroad in this century, maybe on a new footing, and maybe not such a bad one. Ben Lerner is author of Leaving the Atocha Station. Ben, it's been really interesting. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
Steve Paul at the Kansas City Star. Great to have you, Steve.
Thanks very much. I enjoyed it.
And Gary Cernovitz, we owe it all to you. Thanks for joining us today.
Thank you as well.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.
On Point is a production of WBUR Boston and NPR.